Hi, welcome to the Happy Horror Time podcast. I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert, and we are so lucky today to have with us one of the stars of Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers. She portrayed the iconic character of Jamie Lloyd, the very talented JC Brandy. Woo! Thank you for being here with us. How are you doing today, by the way?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We are good, just getting through to the holidays and just getting through this year, as I'm sure everyone
is. I just want to say, because this is a podcast, what people can't see is she is absolutely stunning.
Stunning.
I mean, stunning. Listen, I'm gay, but you are gorgeous.
No, shit, like seriously, whatever
you're doing. Well, I had a reason to get out of my pajamas today, so, you know.
Yes, no, you look great. And so anyway, I was looking up about you on the very trustworthy Wikipedia, of course, which is always 100% correct. And I saw that you were born in London, but raised in New York. So what brought your family from England to the U.S.?
Well, I always tell people I was born in London like somebody might happen to be born in an elevator. It's just where my parents were at that exact moment in time. So my dad was a producer, my birth father, who I don't actually know very well. He didn't raise me, but for the first 2 years of my life. And then they got divorced. My mom moved back, I think, first to California and then New York.
So then how old were you when you came over to New York then?
Sometime between 2 and 4.
Oh, wow. But it's still
To have closer to 2, I guess. But I don't remember anything before 4. So
no one does.
I know. So how did you get involved in acting? Like, did you always want to be in the movies, or how did that start?
Well, it's such a stupid story, actually.
We love stupid stories.
I'm an idiot.
And everyone's like, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, first of all, you know, being raised in New York, I was always going to Broadway shows. And my mom was, you know, taking me in there and in tights that itched. And I just loved it. Not the tights, the shows. But there was this dumb kids show on when I was little, like 4 or something like that. And this is back when TVs had shape, you know, there were
big things
with vents on top. And at the end of the show, they said, if you want us to sing you a song, write it down and send it to us at this address. And so I must have been like 4 years old, 5 years old, and wrote down Little Bunny Foo Foo, right? And because that's what I wanted them to sing. And I folded it up and I tried to stick it in the TV. And my mom came in, she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I want them to sing the song for me. And she was like, well, you have to send it to them. I'm like, no, the people in the box, they said to send it to them. So I'm sending it. She's like, people don't live in your box. And she explained to me, these are actors. This is what they do for a living. And I thought, wait a minute, are you telling me that people get paid to play make-believe? And that's all they have to do every day? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, that's what I want to be.
Sold.
Oh my.
And that was it for me. You know, it was like, because before that, I mean, maybe I was a little older, like 5, kindergarten, people are like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And everybody was saying like a ballerina, and all the boys were saying a fireman, because, you know, back then people had a lot of stereotypes in their heads. And none of it worked for me. I was like, that sounds boring. No, I don't want to do that. But play make-believe, that was something I could get behind. So
you were like, I want to be Michael Myers' niece.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, exactly. I think my parents wanted me to be a football player, and that really panned out.
It worked out with his body type really well, really well. That is a great story. So then did you do theater, or I know you did some TV and stuff first. How did you get, before we get right to Halloween, obviously. Yeah, how did that come about?
So I was like on a mission, you know, every school show, I was in a Saturday kids thing in New York, and we did a little shows at Lincoln Center on the holidays, all original shows. It was called Acting by Children. And you were there all day Saturday from morning to night. I'm like, that would never fly in LA. Kids just don't want to be anywhere for that length of time. But there was a manager who saw me in the show, I guess, and I was like 8 or 9. And she wanted to manage me. And she said, I had to stop biting my nails first. Went on a couple of auditions. I booked the first commercial I went out on. And sometime in between booking that and a little bit later, maybe like a month and a half later, my mom was like, not being a stage mom. She's like, I can't. I'm not doing this. When you're old enough, when you're grown up, you can go do this yourself. So that was my thing. And then I guess when I hit a teenager and, you know, being in Manhattan, I would start looking in Backstage magazine and going to open calls. And I enrolled in a workshop and I got, it was actually a commercial agent showcase. This is so stupid. And I didn't really think of myself as commercial. So, but I thought, well, I get to meet agents this way. So I would go, and there was maybe six agents that came on different days, and they would have you read something and meet with them individually. And I would say, you know, I don't really want to do commercials. I want to do film and theater. And most of them would go, yeah, we're commercial agents, so bye, you know? But one agent was like, great, have my picture on your desk tomorrow morning. I'm going to submit you for a movie.
So awesome.
That was how I started.
Wow, that's cool. I mean, like that. And what was that? What movie was that? Or was that Halloween? Or was that?
No. And so that, no, that was, I don't remember.
God, I know you're like,
then I came out here to visit some friends who were older than me, and I booked this TV series on CBS, and so I just never went home. That was that.
Wow. Yeah. That's cool though. And you got to, and that started your career in make-believe.
That's right. Well, I was doing theater before that. New York, like off Broadway shows and stuff. So, but yeah, pretty much.
And that's really cool because you said your mom wasn't a stage mom, wasn't pushing, said, do it when you're an adult, if you want to. That's really cool and different, because there's so many parents, you know, that are like, oh, my kid wants to be an actor. Good. I'll make money. You know, that kind of thing.
Right. It's a lot of, work being, you know, my daughter is an actress too, and she just started auditioning professionally. She's 15 now. Oh my God.
Oh my God. Wow.
But it's like just a little bit of like doing the tapes, and it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it becomes your full-time job too.
Yeah, it would if she, you know, when she books something, it will.
You know, pandemic at all.
She's, you know, exactly.
So getting toward, you know, when you went up for the audition for Halloween 6, and I know it's not called 6 or anything, but just so I don't have to say the full title every time.
Please.
Halloween, the Curse of Michael Myers. Halloween, the Curse. No. What was the audition process like? Like, did you know much about the Halloween series at that point when you were auditioning, or had you seen the films?
Right. So I was a huge fan of one, huge fan, and anything John Carpenter at that point in my life. And two, I got lost at 3. Like the series lost me at 3. So I hadn't actually seen Danielle in the films. I'd seen posters for it. But, you know, once a franchise kind of loses you, then and I know there are people that as a unique, its own film has a huge fan following. So just for me, I think for my expectations at that point in the story, I just was like, this isn't the same movie that I'm into. So I got the call. I, you know, went in, I met with Ross, who was the casting director, and it was the strangest audition process I had ever had. He just basically talked to me for a little bit. And he said, it's going to be a very physical part. I mean, they were like rushing to recast this, right? They were already shooting.
Oh, wow.
And he said, you know, he goes, here's the script, go home, read the script, have your agent send over your reel. Cause there was nothing to read, right? What are you going to read for this? And so he watched my reel. I went home, I read the script, I rented 4 and 5 and
nice.
Watched it. And went in for the call back the next day to talk to him about the script and sort of talk to him about what I thought about it. And he stuck his head out of his office and said to his assistant, cancel the rest of the auditions. I'm casting JC in the part.
Oh my God, that's got to be the best feeling.
Yeah. So he put me on the phone right then. I mean, it was the strangest audition I've ever had, you know, because he just got a vibe from me, I guess. It wasn't even and from watching my reel, but you know, I look nothing like Danielle. So I often wonder what made him go, yes, that's Jamie, you know, because there are definitely people I know, friends, not friends, like friends, but friends in the industry, acquaintances that I would see at auditions that I'm like, this girl looks way more like Danielle than I do, right? he's like, let's get you some brown contacts and, you know, get a wig for you. And
wow, that's really cool. No, like Tim was saying, like that must be flattering. It's just like, hey, she's got it. Cancel everyone else.
Yeah.
No, that is really cool. I mean, obviously you mentioned it's something I'm sure you hear about all the time. You know, obviously the role of Jamie Lloyd was portrayed by Danielle Harris in both 4 and 5. I'm wondering, and I know, you know, we've watched a lot of the interviews and I know she's cleared everything up since then, but what at the time, what had you heard at the time when you were auditioning about why she wasn't coming back? Like, what were people saying about that?
You know, I didn't know anything, to be honest, because I wasn't a part of this world in that sense. You know, I was, and I was definitely a fan of horror films, but not, wasn't in the convention world, hadn't really ever, I'd done more sci-fi than horror. So, and I didn't know anybody who was like, oh my God, 4 and 5 Danielle at that point. Right. Mm-hmm. I was in I was actually in a rock band at the time. So I was way into the music scene in Hollywood. That was where my brain was at that moment.
Awesome.
And so I was learning to play bass. And I didn't really know anything at all. You know, I mean, I did wonder, but I didn't even really put it together. I thought, well, maybe she's busy or maybe she's just doing, you know, a lot of times child actors. Now, it turns out I had seen Danielle in a ton of stuff as a grown actress. I didn't put it together in my head right now, knowing her credits. I'm like, oh, yeah, I should have. But it just didn't even occur to me, really. They were just casting it fast. And so I went up and, you know, when I met with Dan, I started to get a little bit of a feel of like, oh, this didn't work out. But people generally aren't super gossipy, you know, about that stuff. And they don't know me. They're not going to fill me in on a bunch of thing, you know. And to be totally honest, I don't remember at all the details in which how I got all the information. And perhaps I didn't even realize until, you know, either it was like announced that she wasn't doing it or till people started yelling at me about it. I didn't quite realize what I was stepping into, you know, right? Because I was just like, I'm so excited. I have a part in this movie. I'm going to go to Utah. And we were such a tight knit group for that time we were shooting. And it was so cool to be a part of this franchise. I was so excited, you know?
Yeah. No. And I know she's made it clear. She's like, look, don't blame JC. It's not like she was going to like, you know, step on my toes or anything. It was completely. So, and I feel like she's set the record straight. And like, it is funny, but there's some just diehard fans that like will not see other actors or actresses in different roles, I was going to ask you, did you feel any pressure to play the part the way Danielle had, or did you try to just not let her performance influence you? I mean, I know she was a little kid.
There was no time. Actually, I wish I would have been able to. I watched the movies the one time and was like on a plane 2 days later. And this is before everything was digital. You know, you'd be VHS tapes, and we didn't have this in the hotel. So I just didn't even, there was no time for me to even get any more of a hit from it. And then just talking to people on set about everything. But the truth is that Jamie at that point has been through hell.
Yeah.
She's just like, get me out of this. Just let me live, you know? So just going off of that intention of like pure adrenaline, go, 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 you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a crazy, the situation you find Jamie in at the beginning of the movie is, you know, crazy. And well, first off, I gotta set the record straight. Is Michael Myers the father of Jamie's baby? Is that what is it like?
It would seem that way.
I mean, and that's the thing. It's like, was it written that way? Like, did they say like, oh, she's having a baby and it's her uncle's baby? Like, I always wonder.
It didn't say that. I don't believe, you know, you have to check with Dan. I wish I still had the script. I'm so bummed that I don't. I have to, maybe it's in a box somewhere. You know, I mean, the flashback scene of the rape is pretty obvious that that's what's
happening. I mean the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, it's a cult, and like, okay, so I the cult, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
so they just had a random cult. Or, you know, it's funny, Daniel Ferrans is actually a we know him, he's a friend of ours, so like and he's really, really cool. We've talked with him before, and but I just was wondering, like, it's so funny because they don't, like you said, they don't explicitly say it. I mean, it's pretty much known, but I feel like if they had gone the extra mile and like actually said it, then it's something you like can't take back, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's, you know, pretty obvious in the difficult scene that that's what's happening.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I figured.
I figured. I didn't want to imagine Michael Myers engaging in intercourse.
You know, neither did I.
Exactly. You know, so much of your time on screen, it's a very scary chase sequence. I know there's like a lot. It was very physically demanding. What was the most challenging part of that sequence, and what was the most fun, you know, as you were filming? Because I know it was freezing. I remember hearing you saying about how
it was freezing. And that was pretty much, it wasn't, other than that, it wasn't visit. Well, and I was soaked in, I was in like 14 layers of long johns under that. That was their solution to keep me warm. But it was the rain machine just kept all the water in. So I was just drenched. It was.
Wouldn't that make it colder?
Yeah, I think it did. and so that was just it. And then the night we shot where I first come out of the cult and I'm outside and there's that chain link fence. That was the night I went to hypothermia. And it really was just freezing. It was blizzarding snow and you can see it cause they were raining it out. They took good care of me. They got me off set and got me warmed up. And, I think they decided to have much more of the stuff they could have my stunt double. It's like back when people still had stunt doubles for no reason, you know, cause there was nothing like I look back now, I'm like, there's nothing in there really that you would need a stunt double for, but they just had her doing some of the running. Great girl. She actually worked with me on Star Trek as well. So,
oh, cool.
Did she get hypothermia also?
No, she actually told me, she actually gave me the solution. She said, you know, those little hand warmers.
Oh, yeah.
She said, put them in your socks.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So that's. I
can't even imagine like it being that cold. Did you get to enjoy any part of that though, or were you just so concerned with the weather? I'm trying to imagine like
very little of it was outside. I mean, you know, if you think about it, it was outside, but it was not. You know, it was a little bit enclosed. I loved that train station we shot at, or a bus station, whatever it was. The really, I love that scene. You know, or on the phone in the bathroom. That my favorite part is where I get to stop and look at the baby for the first time, you know?
Yeah.
The one place where I could be like, show a little of like, oh my God, I have this baby, like out of the, like of regular human life within this craziness, you know?
And it's also very telling and speaks to, you know, how you played it, that like the character is, I mean, Jamie is brave enough that she is looking out for the baby even above herself, you know, through it. It's a really brave, heroic character. And so it's really cool to be able to play that and to be looking out for someone else even more than yourself as you're running away from a crazy serial killer.
Right.
You know, obviously, something else that's been talked about a lot is, you know, I know the movie changed a lot from how it was originally written and then the shot to how it ended up on screen. Do you know, with all the reshoots, like, do you know what led to all the reshoots? Was it test screening performance or was it the studios?
I don't know that I'm remembering all this right, but by my recollection, it was that Miramax wanted, or Dimension wanted, death every 15 minutes and they wanted it to be gory.
Oh, wow.
And I think that came from the studio, but that might have originally come from test screenings. Yeah, they want it because, you know, I know that the feeling was to do it sort of slow and have it be suspenseful, more like the original, and not have it be as gory, you know. So went from like the, you can tell the difference between the producer's cut and
definitely.
And I always wonder like why studios, I mean, look, I get the, we're huge horror fans obviously, but so the original Halloween is my favorite film of all time, like when you were saying you loved it, and you know, by today's standards I'm sure people would say it's slow, but I'm just like, you got to give people time to be scared, you know.
Right. Otherwise, it's cheap jumps, right?
It's crazy to me what it. And well, speaking of death every 15 minutes, I mean, when obviously, unfortunately, Jamie meets her demise in this film. And how did, I mean, were you upset that they didn't keep her alive longer? Did you feel it was integral to the story?
So, you know, whenever anybody asks me that, I go, no, because if they had, Danielle probably would have done the part and I wouldn't have gotten to be a part of this great franchise. So, you know, selfishly, not as the fan of the series. As a fan of the series, yeah, probably would have been much cooler to have Jamie alive longer. I think it was a missed opportunity for them. It was her story, you know. She's such a compelling character in 4 and 5, and so to not have it be her fight, you know. I think was a missed opportunity. I know that Dan had originally planned for something like that. And, but everything, you can look at anything in retrospect and think, you know, but I'm glad that I'm glad I'm a part of this world, you know, I'm part of this.
Yeah. And but just so you know, like you say, Jamie's a compelling character in 4 and 5. Like, I think she's very compelling in 6, and that's due to your performance. Seriously, she's just, yes, she doesn't make it, but like, she goes out with a bang, and I don't mean the farm grinder, you play it so well. It, like I said, very heroic, very brave, and it's just so, it's a great character all throughout. I do have to ask, when it comes to the 2 death scenes, the one from the producer's cut where I think you're stabbed and then shot at the hospital versus the farm grinder, which one do you prefer?
Okay, so I mean, there's a lot of reasons for this. I don't like the gun death, right? At the time I didn't think about it because, again, I wasn't as much a part of the universe, but I think that the critique that like people don't get shot in Halloween movies is totally fair.
Totally, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so that makes total sense to me. But I do like the death in the stab death in the pre-gunshot death in the farm better than the farm tiller. I understand why people like the farm tiller. I wish I couldn't make it work for myself as an actor. So maybe that's a big part of it, of like having like my guts ripped out. And then they love the line, "You can't have the baby," which I understand. But it was just, how do I play this? How do I play this with my guts flying out? I mean, like, you know, that like last words with the in blood and the, and I don't like the way the reshoots were lit. No offense to the DP. They might have been just dealing with constraints or whatever, but I think that one of the things I think is just so wonderful about Halloween 6 is how beautiful the cinematography is and that we did in Utah.
Yeah.
And we lost that all in the reshoots, in my opinion. It's flat, like more video looking and less, you know, and that bothers me. So
yeah.
I was going to say, when you're, I've watched the documentaries and like that behind the scenes and stuff, like they said they had to shovel snow. Was the barn also covered in snow, or like were you not in on those days? I heard that you guys were fighting snow.
Yeah, no, we were. I remember them raining out the snow because that's where my brain was at, right? Like when I was out there, I was ready to work. So they might have been shoveling snow before I was. I'm trying to think where I don't remember. I remember we did the barn scene the same night we did. We did some things in the truck, right? Not the chase in the truck. The chase in the truck was done the night of the bus stop. Sorry, it's a long time ago. Where, you know, I come out of the car and then go into the barn. So I was hanging out in the warm car for quite a bit of time. And now I might be feeling a little guilty that people were shoveling snow, but.
No, I'm going to go on record and say I completely agree with you in terms of the deaths. I actually thought it was almost like an insult to the character to have such a gory, disgusting death. Like, you don't follow this character for so many movies than to like rip her guts out. You know?
At least get a couple like punches in or something. I mean, like,
yeah,
it was very graphic.
Or like if they wanted to do so, like they could have done like a pitchfork, maybe would have been graphic, but at least given me like, because part of the issue is that to make it look like a farm tiller, there wasn't really, to my recollection, anything behind me when we were shooting that. It was a piece that was like wrapped under my shirt, around my stomach, that came through, right, with these rotating. And so I was sort of just like this, which you can see it, like I'm holding myself up, but leaning to look like I'm on some. And I feel like that it reads when you see it. Like once you know that and you watch it, I look like nobody should be, like, I don't look like I would if I had something supporting me behind me.
Because yeah.
You can't, there are no, I don't, I'm not a contortionist. So I
don't you're not,
you did a great
to
job.
Make it look like, you know, and actually stand up at the same time.
But on the same topic, I also agree that the gunshot death is a little bit of a letdown too, because it's like almost like you in the producer's cut. I love that you survived the stabbing, but it's like if they're going to have you survive just to be shot by Dr. Witt, it's very, very confusing. I was very upset when your character died, and I think, yeah, it was very confusing because I liked that they had you alive longer in the producer's cut, but it was a weird bit of a letdown with the gunshot. But I will say, if I had to pick between producers and theatrical, I probably would pick producers, just because your character lasts longer.
Well, I think it also because the producer's cut, it has like a slow build, but it's it you know, I enjoy the Halloween space. Like, I didn't want it to be rushed and jump scared, but, yeah. But don't get me wrong. I appreciate those things too, but you know. Mm.
So another thing, you know, I know it's been 25 years. Since
Happy
this
anniversary.
Movie.
Yes. Hard.
Yeah. So how did being a part of this movie affect your life in the course of your career?
That's an excellent question that I'm not sure I can get. I mean, I can tell you how it affected my life.
Okay.
I'm not sure how it affected my career because I don't know. I mean, somebody might have called me in on something based on that credit, but you never know really why somebody's. It's not like Star Trek where I can definitely point to other jobs that have come from that. But I'll tell you, like, people I just adore to this day, you know, Dan and meeting Mikey, you know, because of this and doing the conventions. And so it's like in my life, it's been the gift that keeps on giving, right? Like, I love being a part of the horror world. I love talking to fans. I love being a part of something that means so much to so many people. You know, that's just such a cool thing. And I love that there's a reason to connect with my friends that I made in Utah 25 years ago. You know, like seeing Mariah is like so amazing. We only see each other when there's conventions, really. We sometimes talk or text each other, but it's, you know, she lives one place, I live another. And so it's hard to keep friendships sometimes, you know, especially when you're grown up and have got kids. And so that's been amazing.
I mean, I can tell you from two huge fans of the Halloween series, it's so nice to hear when someone who is in these movies embraces them, is grateful for them. And it's just like, we are so thankful. And I've said this to other people we've talked to on the podcast. It's just like, you know, those fans love these movies. Like you said, there's such a fandom for the Halloween movies. And it's so nice when you can talk to someone who, and they realize how important that, like, of a contribution that was, because it really means, you know, so much to people like us. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I'm a fan of things too, right? Just because I act doesn't mean I don't get it. And that's, you know, as much as I told you the story when I was little, that's also a part of it. You know, I would go to movies as a kid and you'd see just something about it. For me, it was the way people would communicate and connect and get through problems and right. Like, and work, like to be a part of those worlds. And that's something I love about, I always try to find something in every part that I book that is a different thing than I'd ever get to do in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And just take a minute to be grateful for it, because I think that's it's a really cool part of what we get to do. Right. Like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So when it was done, was there a like a red carpet premiere?
That's my favorite question.
I was waiting for you.
No, I was like, no, but I was just going to say, did you get to meet the rest of the cast and, or like, was there a red carpet premiere? Like, I like to say it twice.
Alzheimer's. There was a premiere. But I'm trying to remember. It didn't feel very red carpety to me. There was a premiere. I remember seeing it. I remember the producers being in there. And
was Hottie Paul Rudd there?
Paul Rudd was probably there, but I don't remember. I mean, Dan would be able to tell you. I don't. You know, Paul and I barely talked during, right? Because I wasn't in scenes with everybody. So it was, I didn't fly in and out with them. I talked to Paul a little. He was always really super nice to me. We talked mostly about like geeky acting stuff when we talked, because he's, you know, a theater actor as well. He talked to me about where he had studied, and so we had those kinds of conversations, I think, more than like, hey, how you doing kind of conversations.
Right.
No, that makes sense. And do you still keep in touch with, I think you said Mariah, but like, do you still keep in touch with any of the other cast or crew, Daniel Farren's obviously, or just see them at conventions?
Well, yeah, I see the cast at conventions and on Facebook, you know, sometimes it's like Facebook is like so bad for so many things and so great for staying in touch, right?
I agree with that.
100. I couldn't have said it better myself. That's exactly the
best way.
There's
just people you would lose track of, and so it's great to have that. I was really good friends with the makeup artist for a long time after we shot, for some reason. I don't know what happened to her, and the AD who was dating her. So I stayed in touch with her for a while. They started dating, I think, after sometime before reshoots. Maybe, I don't really remember.
It's okay. We're not going to tell.
I don't know why I lost touch with them, but I just did. Yeah, and I occasionally reach out to Mariah and everybody else I see at conventions. You know, mostly. But that's, I would awesome. Stay in touch with them. It's just, you know, life gets busy.
No, so. Of course. And so, you know, I've heard that you and Daniel Harris had since become friends. And have you guys have worked together? Have you been in projects together?
Well, yes. Her little film, her short film Prank that she directed, and she put me into like a small part in that. So that was super fun.
No, that's awesome. Do you feel like you have a special bond with her because you both are like the only actors?
I'd say so.
When you first met her, did you talk about that? It's just so interesting for fans. Like, did you guys talk about that or?
No, we didn't. You know what it is? We became friends through a mutual friend who I've known since I was about 15 years old, Jennifer Blanc. She's also an actress. So I don't know if
Blonde. I've seen her.
Yeah. She's a great actress. So she was really close with Danielle. And she was like, I don't remember how it came up, but she was like, oh, Danielle's one of my best friends. You should meet her. I was like, I would love to. So but mostly we talk about girl stuff. And when we, you know, she told me, she's like, I'm telling the fans, she's my friend. So leave her alone. You know, like, thank you. You know.
No, that's awesome. And can we, I don't think I've seen, have you seen Prank? Because I would love to. Is it available anywhere or it's a short film, you said?
It is. And I feel like it should be. It's really well done. Like, I don't know.
Like I've heard of it.
Name sounds familiar.
It was it was done as part of like a series of shorts. And you'll have to ask Danielle. I don't know.
Oh, that's yeah.
Hang on.
Danielle, let me see.
I can text Jennifer and see if she knows.
Please let us know because we would love to see it. So, I mean, just a couple more questions, non-Halloween related questions. Obviously, you were talking about your resume includes music and that I read that you were a songwriter and guitarist for the band Lowball. Which I guess has songs in both Legally Blonde and What Lies Beneath, which Correct. Is awesome. So how long have you been a musician and how did the band get formed and is the band still together?
The band is not still together, although I'm working on a new project with the drummer we just started talking about, trying to keep ourselves busy during COVID. When I was doing Halloween, I was in a band called Lunchbox. I was the bass player.
Okay.
And then I left that band and I started writing my own songs. And I had seen the drummer in another band and she was amazing. And a friend of mine was doing a movie that was non-union and was looking for musicians. And I thought, I'd love to have this girl, her name is Claudia. I'd love to have Claudia play with me on my music. So maybe I'll like hook her up with this thing and say, hey, you know, if you ever feel like, I would have hooked her up with the movie anyway, but you know, so that's what I did. And she did the movie. She got one getting the part. She came back. She said, let me hear your music. She really liked it. And we actually wound up taking a picture with some friends and making up a bio and all this stuff based on things that I had done and things that she had done. And we got into off of my 4-track demos, South by Southwest, playing emos on a Friday night, like 9 o'clock, which is unheard of, right? We had not played one show yet.
Oh my God.
So we were like, we got to put a band together and start rehearsing. And that's how the band started. So we've always just been super tenacious. And, you know, somebody says, you can't do that. We will go watch us, you know?
That's great. Yeah, that's South awesome. By Southwest. That's huge.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
And then I guess that led to then getting the songs in the different movies or how, yeah.
No, well, the band was together, I want to say like 4 or 5 years. So it was a long process, a lot of work. Like we got into South by Southwest pretty easily, but we worked pretty hard to get a record deal, you know?
Yeah.
In between. And there's good and bad about having your third live show be in front of every A&R guy, you know? So we sparked interest, but we weren't necessarily ready at that exact moment. I'm trying to remember if What Lies Beneath before Legally Blonde?
I think
What Lies Beneath was 2000, Legally Blonde was 2001.
Right.
I thought it was the opposite.
I can't remember. No, it definitely was because we didn't have our new singer yet for What Lies Beneath.
That's a good memory.
I can't remember how we got submitted for, it might have been through our manager at the time. Because we had a manager and we had a lawyer before we had a record deal or anything. You know, that's how it sort of worked back then, at least. But we submitted to the music supervisor and they loved the music. And they actually were casting a band for the movie. The daughter in the movie, Kate Town, I think is her name. Do you know mm-hmm. Michelle Pfeiffer's daughter.
I cannot confirm.
Her name was Kate. I don't remember her last name.
Yes. Kate.
Yeah. So Kate had a rock band at college that, you know, so originally we're actually in the movie, and I actually, they gave me a scene to do because I was the only one that was actually union. So they gave me a scene where I go and I like bring a drink into her and Michelle Pfeiffer. And like, there's a funny bit where Michelle's like, is that a dog collar you have on your neck? I'm like, yeah, you know.
Oh.
So they wound up cutting the scene, but they left the song in the movie, which is good. So that's how, I mean, yeah, they were just looking for an all-girl band for the movie.
Congratulations.
No, and that's
then
cool.
So then Malik, okay, this is the way that Halloween changed my life. So Malik, right, saw our band play Dragonfly. He's like, I want to do a music video for you guys. I want to direct a music video. So he did this amazing music video for us. For a song called Uncomplicated. You can find it on YouTube.
Oh, that's awesome.
He directed it. He did a fabulous job. Just did it for us. And so we submitted that to Legally Blonde to try to get a song in there. And Ron Fair, who was the A&R guy for the soundtrack, was like, yes, and I want to sign you. So that's how we got signed.
Bonus.
Wow. No, that's
exactly.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Another thing, as I was going through your IMDb page, we saw that you were in a short film called God's Helper with Friday the 13th Part 7 star Kevin Spiritus. It's funny because we actually spoke to him for an episode of the podcast like a while back. And so we were like, oh my God. It was like,
you're,
you know,
connected.
Yeah. How did you get involved with that? And what can you tell us about that short
film? And was Kevin nice?
He was so sweet. He was very nice. Really, really nice. I just auditioned for it and I got the part and did the short, and that was kind of it. It was not.
What's it about?
Really interesting stories. Really.
Did we see it?
If I can find, I think it's on YouTube. No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We'll look. We'll do some investigating work.
Did you know that he was from one of the Friday the 13th, or did that not even? Yeah.
No idea. You know, the funny thing is that I guess I consider myself a horror fan. But like more from the original, like I don't know how down a rabbit hole of sequels I've ever gone with anything, you know, because I think you experience a few sequels that don't live up to the first one, and then you just don't bother with sequels really anymore, you know?
No, totally. Yeah.
You're in part 6. He's in part 7 of Friday 13th. You're all part of the little world.
It is. Well, for crazed, weird fans like us, we notice those right. things. Yeah, but we just thought it was so cool because I saw that and I was like, wait, it's just, there's two actors. It's JC and Kevin Spiritus. That's so crazy.
It was a great little short. So I'm like this ex popular cheerleader girl, right? Who's now outgrown the popularity and is suicidal and is always like threatening to kill myself. That's sort of the backstory.
So it's uplifting.
Well, it is weird, right? So he like has me kidnapped in a car. He kidnaps me in a car and he's going to kill me.
Oh, nice guy.
But it's all like a ruse to get me to realize how much life is wonderful and I don't want to die.
Oh, so it could be uplifting, yeah. Tim.
I mean, you know what I'm saying.
I mean, it's called God's Helper, so right. I hope that he's not killing you. No, that's right. Interesting. We're going to have to search for it because definitely. We need to see that. But we do have one final question, and we ask this to everyone that we interview. What is one thing that you can tell us about Halloween 6 that you've never told any other interviewer, any other podcast, or any other publication, even if it's just a tiny detail?
Yeah, you could just be like, one day on craft services, we had chicken. You know what? That's cool.
My memory's not that good, guys.
I know. I know.
I'm trying to remember. I'm years ago. Oh, gosh.
No.
I don't know what I've told people or what I haven't is the problem.
Oh, it's no
problem. Right, so I'll tell you and you can tell me if you've heard it somewhere.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
You
know?
That the brown contacts used to float out of my eyes when I would cry. So I couldn't do any scenes where, like, I have to keep myself from crying during scenes.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't even know you were in contacts.
I didn't know until I watched your interview that you had to wear brown contacts, but I did not know. Had you, and you were wearing them and they would fall out when you cried?
It would float out. Yeah, they were like start to float out of my eyes. Yeah.
Oh my God. I have never had contacts.
Me neither.
And I'm kind of deathly afraid of putting stuff in my eyes. So I don't know how I could do that.
I bet they're more comfortable now. Yeah. Well, if you ever want to, you know, I'm a hypnotherapist, so I can help you get them.
I'm gonna, funny you should ask that, because I may take you up on that. It's seriously, yeah. It's been like I've had an eye phobia, if there's an actual name for that, about touching my eye. It's really weird.
Well, what kind of therapist are you?
Hypnotherapist.
Oh,
and, yeah. And like a life coach, NLP, neurolinguistic programming. I work with therapeutic imagery and.
I need some life coaching.
Yeah, it's fun. I really love it. And it's actually, you know, I spent so many years as an actor going, why are all these amazing, talented people who can't they get out of their own way? And sort of in my search for trying to figure that out, I came across hypnotherapy. And my first, you know, thing about it was to kind of roll my eyes like, oh, yeah, I hypnotize you. But there's a lot of misinformation that's actually. The state of hypnosis is a natural state that you're in and out of all day long anyway, right? Like when you ever go to a movie and you cry,
yeah,
laugh, well, you're suggestible to that story, right? You're not actually experiencing anything that makes you, you're taking on the story. Or when you get scared, you're actually hypnotized to that story. You're suggestible to that story. So all of this is to make you suggestible, right? Most of us are, actually.
No, it makes
we're
sense.
In and out of state because it's and especially scary things put you in fight or flight, which puts you in hypnosis. So
it makes sense. I'm being serious. Like, I've always thought, have you ever seen the movie On a Clear Day You Can See Forever with Barbara Streisand? I'm sorry, just because she goes to a hypnotherapist and it's different because she figures out all these past lives and everything. But great movie, great soundtrack.
And she sings.
Yeah, she's singing I've Missed Out, it sounds like.
No, well, anyway, we just want to thank you so much again.
Yes, I know. Thank you.
Seriously. This was so much fun for appreciative, and thank you for taking the time. We'll keep you posted on when, probably in a few weeks, when we're going to release the episode. And again, you've just made our day.
Yeah,
so thank you so much.
Making our Saturday.
Yes, and email me. And thank you guys for having me.
Of course. It's our pleasure. Yeah. Our pleasure. We'll definitely email you. And okay, well, great. We'll enjoy the rest of your weekend, and hopefully we'll talk with you soon. Okay,
bye, guys. Thank you so much for having me here.
Yes, definitely. Bye. Bye. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Happy Horror Time.
This podcast is hosted by Matt Emmer and myself, Tim Murdoch. It's co-produced by Jacob Randall.
You can find Happy Horror Time on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many other platforms, including Happy TV, a free streaming app with content dedicated to the LGBTQ+ community.
If you'd like to stay updated on our developments, please like and follow the Happy Horror Time podcast page on Facebook. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Happy Horror Time.
And don't hesitate to send us an email at happyhorrortime@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think of the podcast, any movie recommendations, or any horror stars you'd like us to interview.
To support the podcast, please visit patreon.com/happyhorrortime and sign up to be a patron. You'll gain access to additional content, including the bonus episode we just released last month. We're planning on releasing one new bonus episode every month moving forward.
But before we go, Tim, we'd like to recommend Totally 80s Room on YouTube and Instagram. Not only does this page post the coolest clips from 80s pop culture, but the creator assembled his own 80s era museum filled with retro products and all kinds of fun nostalgia.
Anyone who's experienced the 80s has to check out Totally 80s Room.
I'm Matt Emmert.
And I'm Tim Murdoch.
And thanks again for listening to Happy Horror Time.